Taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains right now on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in the physical therapy program at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. So really pleased to have Lori and Bill back, and certainly they are ready to answer your questions as we talk about all those aches and pains that we can get. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Lori, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to be here. Wish the weather was a little nicer today.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for coming.
Good to be back. It'd be nice if Mom Nature checked the calendar and saw that it was June.
Exactly, exactly. Because what's going to happen is it's going to get warm and everyone's going to take off on their bikes and their golf clubs and everything else, and they're going to get hurt because they said, finally, summer's here. Now we're going to go do everything that we've missed out on.
Make up for lost time.
Exactly.
Well, I wish it would warm up. It's just been a very cold spring. My wife in particular, she likes warm.
Yeah.
And she has been not happy.
My garden looks bleak.
Oh, our garden looks great.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, our garden looks great. But
yeah, our weeds are having a good time with all the rain.
The weeds are having a good time, yeah. Yeah. But the tomatoes.
Well, my lawn looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah. The tomatoes are looking sad.
Yeah.
We've got Ann in St. Paul, Minnesota, with a question for you. So let's go to Ann. Ann, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 79 years of age, and I have bones that's very active all over my life. But for the last 10 years, I was diagnosed with scoliosis and osteoporosis, but I'm getting worse by the day, and I have been under the care of the pain doctor, and I've tried the morphine, and I've tried the other one, but my problem is this, that I am getting severely much harder to walk.
Yeah.
And my other problem is that when I go to bed and sleep at night, I wake up with this horrendous pain from the pressure, whatever way I'm lying. My problem is mainly on the left side, and I get this terrific tightness in the muscles, and I'm jumping all over the place. And I don't want to be totally inactive, but when I'm active, the pain kills me. And have you any suggestions to cope with this terrible life?
Yes. Well, a couple things first. The scoliosis is, we have normal natural curves in our spine, and the scoliosis is an excessive curve from side to side. And it's not a rare condition. Lots of people have a degree of this curvature and don't know it. But as the curvature gets greater and greater, it starts causing multiple problems with muscles and joints and also heart and lung function as well. And osteoporosis is losing bone density, which happens to all of us as we age. And that can be a really tough combination. And a couple things with the night pain and waking up in as much pain. And I don't know what adjustments or modifications you can make, but sometimes a mattress can be too soft and sometimes it can be too hard. But mattresses are expensive. If you have a sense that the mattress may be too soft, that you sink in too much into the mattress, if you can have somebody help you to get even a piece of plywood, a quarter inch piece of plywood, and put that between the mattress and the box springs, can firm it up. Mm-hmm. If that helps a bit, then maybe a new mattress is worth considering purchasing. Some mattresses are too hard, and if that's the case, if that's the thought, you can buy mattress pads to put over the top of the mattress and soften it up a bit, and that can help with comfort on the bony prominences in our hips and shoulders and spine. When people sleep on their side, a pillow between their knees can help keep their back in more of a neutral or middle ground position. And on the side, if you're on your side, a pillow underneath that top arm can again keep you from twisting too much at night during sleep. And if you're on your back, a pillow or two underneath your knees can help put your back in more of a neutral or middle ground position. And I'm saying that we move around at night, so you may have to kind of pack them back in here and there. In terms of the walking, and again, I don't know if this has been tried or not, or if you have transportation, but it sounds like a pool, water may be a really good place for you to do some exercise, activity, with guidance from a physical therapist, where your muscles get worked, the joints get moved, you get this endurance work. And that may be a good place to start if that has not been attempted yet.
Yeah. All good tips. And thank you very much for calling, Ann. Good luck to you. Appreciate your call. And Joanne in Menominee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I injured my back last Thursday. I bent over and tried to pull a piece of tape off the floor, and that's all it took. I couldn't get in the house. I couldn't move. We had to call an ambulance to bring me to the hospital.
Oh, boy.
Oh, good grief.
Yep, and since then, it's improved a little bit, but there's a lot of... I'm afraid to move much. I'm afraid to... I have to keep the phone in my pocket all the time. Yeah. I've tried ice, and that doesn't really help. I've tried heat, and that doesn't really help. And I'm wondering, is it just going to take time? I have a history of four bulging discs, and I'm on disability already because of my back, but okay. You know, I've never had this.
Joanne, are you having any leg symptoms with this, or is it all up in your back?
Both. When it's the strangest thing. When I have the pain and it's severe, it's almost like you have to bear down. It's a strange thing. I know it's almost like having a child. The pain is so intense that it does go down both legs to your feet.
Okay. And are you having any numbness or tingling?
No.
Okay. And any weakness around your ankles, tripping over your toes, or having trouble getting up and down stairs?
No.
Okay.
Not as long as I hold on to the wall.
Okay. All right. Well, in most cases, time should take care of this. Typically, it can take anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks for someone to recover from an injury like this. You are beyond the stage of being on bed rest. The recommendation is after a couple of days, people are better off being up and moving within the parameters of what your pain will allow you. So lying down periodically is a good thing to just take some weight off your back, but you're still better up moving and doing whatever you do gently during the course of the day. And certainly any kind of lifting, you've got to either leave it on the floor unless it's a crisis, have somebody pick it up for you, or go to a medical supply place. You can buy one of those reachers or grabbers that basically lengthen your arm out by a couple of feet that allows you to pick things up off the floor. But with your history of the bulging discs, it's not unusual for a relatively benign activity like just bending over to pick up something and all of a sudden your back really goes out on you.
Right.
Are you doing any kind of exercises for your back long-term?
I just keep on moving, and I guess one of the questions is, I belong to the YMCA, but I'm almost afraid to get in there for fear I'm stuck and I can't move at all.
Right. Well, a good place would be in the water. If you can get in the pool and walk.
I can.
Okay. Yeah, I think the pool would be a good place for you.
Okay.
And try to exaggerate your arm swing a bit in the water. You walk forward, you walk backward, you do sidestepping, you kind of hang in a corner, kind of you're floating. If there's some sort of flotation device, that traction can feel good. Yeah, I think you'd probably get a lot of mileage out of that right now.
Good.
Luck.
I'll do that. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Here's an email from Christina in Mount Horeb who says, I rolled my ankle 2 weeks ago at mile 5 of the Madison Half Marathon. Finished the race all right, but my ankle is still swollen. I'm fine so long as I walk and stand straight on it, but twisting and turning causes pain, as does direct contact and pressure on that spot. Is this something that will likely go away on its own, or does 2 weeks of pain and swelling indicate otherwise?
Well, she continued to and finished the race on it. Depends upon where the spot is that hurts. If it's directly on the bone, and she had a small avulsion fracture, then it's going to have a hard time healing sufficiently on its own if she remains active. If it's a garden variety sprain of the typical ligaments on the outside of the ankle, you know, typically with some rest and care and strengthening exercises, you should get over it. I expect that at 2 weeks, it wouldn't be healed yet. So, you know, if she's an active person, an active runner and is physically active, I'd recommend getting it looked at, especially if her pain is directly on the bone, to rule out a fracture to make sure that this heals in a sufficient time frame so that she can continue to be as active as she wants to be.
All right. Let's go to Ron in Madison next. Ron, hello to you.
Hello. Good morning, Bill and Lori.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, Friday night I was walking and then didn't realize that the sidewalk inclined. And when I hit my foot came down, my calf muscle was like a spring. It just sort of really tightened up into a knot and then very quickly uncoiled. with a, like a pop. My calf swelled up. I could still walk a bit, but it was painful. And I've been icing it. There's still a bit of swelling. There's still a bit of tightness and pain there. And my wife saw a band on the calf. So my question really is, when do you determine that you should see a physician or an urgent care responder? And how do you know if you don't go to them, how do you know what exercises to do?
Yeah. Oh, well, what a good question that is. I don't know that anyone has a sufficient answer to that question. It's a somewhat individualized question based upon your comfort level with your body and your medical history and so on and so forth. You know, obviously, if you have pain that is sharp or stabbing, if you're unable to put weight on a limb, if you have numbness and tingling, I mean, you know, I mean, think about any body part, it would be different, you know, in your shoulder. If you're unable to lift your arm, you know, then you need to go see somebody. Those would be the big red flags. A particular note would be significant weakness or numbness and tingling that would suggest some sort of a neurologic injury. In your case, it sounds like a fairly straightforward musculoskeletal problem. It sounds as if, from your description, you tore some muscle fibers in your calf muscle. The differential diagnosis would be an Achilles rupture, and that is a rupture of the tendon away from the bone. But typically, you would know about that because you could see the difference in the size and shape of your Achilles tendon right above your ankle. Mm-hmm. You'd have difficulty with the push-off phase of gait. You wouldn't be able to walk with a normal gait. So if she's seeing some sort of a muscle fiber or a bulge of some sort up in the calf muscle, then chances are you tore some of those fibers. You know, if you're getting significant swelling in your calf, you're having trouble walking, I'd see somebody about this, particularly if you're an active person. It's part of your Achilles muscle group, and it's important in gait for walking, climbing, running, etc. So you want to make sure that you get it treated right. Is it something that requires urgent care? Probably not, but it's something that you should probably be seen for.
All right. Good luck, and thanks very much for calling, Ron. Ashley and Mozani, we turn to you. Hello, Ashley.
How are you guys this morning?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Good. I'm just calling because I recently fractured my right hip, and the prognosis was to stay off of it and stay on my crutches, and I did that. And then I found out I was pregnant, and that was after I was off my crutches, and it started hurting again. Not again, but the pain never fully went away, I should say. And it comes and it goes. Sometimes it's pain-free, and sometimes it hurts to walk on it. And so, I try to stay off of it as much as possible, but I want to stay active throughout my pregnancy. I'm a very active person as it is. So I'm wondering if there is any sort of strengthening exercises I can do or what kind of exercise I should stick to.
Oh, what a really good question. So your hip fracture is healed, they're saying?
Well, they never get to do a second x-ray on it because of the pregnancy. So,
okay. And where was the fracture? How did you fracture it? Is it a stress fracture?
Yeah, just a stress fracture right under the ball of the femur.
Okay. All right. Well, this is going to be something that's important to keep an eye on throughout your pregnancy and postpartum because of changes in bone density relative to your pregnancy. So you're at risk of being osteopenic for your pregnancy and lactation if you choose to breastfeed. So I'd first stay in close touch with my obstetrician and make sure that person is aware of your history of the stress fracture and keeping an eye on your bone density and your vitamin D intake and calcium, all those things. They may want to keep a closer eye on that. Secondly, yes, there is exercise. You can do the pool is an ideal place for you to exercise. You can do strengthening exercises, mobility exercises, cardiovascular exercises, all in a minimally weighted environment, taking the weight off that hip. So that would be the ideal place for you to be training through your pregnancy.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guest here, as we talk about all those aches and pains and sprains and strains to deal with here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking your questions about all those aches and pains and sprains and strains with Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in the Physical Therapy Program at UW Medical School. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Alan in Baraboo next. Alan, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About 4 years ago, I started swimming on a regular basis, and I developed, I think the doctor called it a golfer's elbow in my left elbow. So I did some exercises, some therapy, and put on an armband that put a little pressure on one of the muscles, and that seemed to solve it. But 4 years later, I'm still wearing that armband, and if I take it off for a couple of days, my elbow still gets sore. I'm active. I have a rowing machine. I bicycle. I do a lot of stuff. So I guess my question is will this, it seems like it's sort of solved or in remission. But I'm still sort of tied to this pressure band around my forearm.
Alan, let me ask
never
you this.
Solve that.
Do you wear the strap all day long? Is it a, you know, all day thing, or only when you're swimming, only when you're active?
Well, I wear it all day long, and I have tried swimming, and if I swim, it hurts right away, even if I wear the band. Other activities, which are a little put different strains on the muscles and stuff, seem to be okay. And in a sense, I know I've injured that tendon. You know, does it ever really heal back to where it originally was, or does it back to like 90% of where it was, and then I'm going to be more prone to injuring it in the future?
I'd say it's probably more the latter,
okay.
Especially as long as it's been going on. So you're not swimming anymore at all?
No, I just sort of stayed away from that, and
okay.
I do other things
okay.
to stay active.
And but the so when you take it off, you take it off all day, and then it starts to hurt again. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, and
okay.
it's not real bad, but I can tell it's,
okay.
it's different than if I had worn it all day.
Okay. Well, there's a couple alternatives. One is instead of going cold turkey, try to wean yourself out of it. And that is, you know, wear it during higher demand activities and then take
mm-hmm.
it off and taper yourself out of it instead of trying to go cold turkey because it's too much of a change in
okay.
the load when you go from wearing it to not wearing it at all. So one way to go is a taper. The other is there are some rehabilitation programs that for tendinopathies, which is what it sounds like you have, that can be successful. It takes guidance and it takes some diligence, but it's a progressive loading activity, a progressively heavier weights at progressively higher speeds, done under the supervision that can help resolve these kinds of problems. So that's another option if the taper doesn't work.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jason in Marshfield, your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Back in March when we had a big snowstorm, I slipped and fell on my back. It took me a couple of weeks to get the bravery to go into hospitals because I'm slightly afraid of hospitals. But eventually they figured out I have a ruptured disc.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, because today, getting out of the hospital, I heard your radio station, perfect timing. I'm like, I'm going to call an expert. We have me scheduled for the cortisone injection. But as they said, it'll just help the reduce the pain, and the rupture might heal itself. But they said it might never be the same. I'm just wondering what I'm going to be looking forward to the rest of my life from this disc.
Right. Yeah. Well, a ruptured disc is the outer part of the disc is a ligament, just like our ACL at the knee or metacarpal ligament at the knee. And one of the differences, though, the outer part of the disc does not have a very good blood supply like other ligaments do. And so the disc can heal to a degree. And in most cases, it does heal where people are back functionally doing most activities. But in some people, the anatomy is never normal again. The cortisone injection is designed to take away the pain, especially if there's any symptoms in the leg, to decrease the irritation on the nerve root. And then you want to be in an exercise program that is designed also to move the pain out of your leg and keep it out of your leg, and then to restore flexibility in your back, and then importantly, strengthening of the back and the hips, a stability stabilization exercise program. So even with the injection, if you are not currently working with a physical therapist, you should be, because they need to guide you along a series of exercise progressions to help make sure you can return to most activities, functioning at close to a normal level. Hmm. Have you seen a therapist along the way, Jason?
Yes, but at first they were just treating it as potential leg sprain.
Yeah.
Until an MRI, we actually didn't think it was in the back anymore.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, there are certain exercises that are designed to get pain out of the leg, up toward the back, and once it's in the back, then you have a better chance of getting full function and return to the back. So, with this diagnosis, if the injection helps settle down the pain, that opens up some doors for rehabilitation.
Yep, there you have it. Good luck, Jason. Thank you very much for calling. Barb emailed us and says, how long does it take for piriformis syndrome to heal? Will it go away on its own without muscle relaxers or painkillers? I'm a female with a sit-down job. Seems worse when riding in the car or sitting in soft furniture. And first, what is piriformis syndrome?
Well,
pain in the butt.
It literally is a pain in the butt, yes. And as big a pain as it could be, you would think it would be a huge muscle. But the piriformis is actually a very small muscle, but an important muscle deep in the buttock area. It's one of the deep hip rotators. But it has a very close anatomical relationship with the sciatic nerve, and that's where a lot of the problems can come into play. In fact, there's a percentage of people where part of the sciatic nerve actually goes through the muscle belly. And so if the muscle gets tight or goes into spasm, it can irritate or compress the sciatic nerve and cause major problems. It is not an easy condition to diagnose, and oftentimes it gets confused with pain that is actually coming from the low lumbar area, the low back area. It can really mimic piriformis syndrome. And sitting can aggravate both, whether it is the piriformis muscle. There's weight right on the muscle belly when we do sit. But it also increases pressure in the low lumbar area. So it can take anywhere from maybe 6 to 8 weeks. There should be some progress along 6 to 8 weeks. A gentle stretching program can be helpful, but it can easily be overstretched if people are stretching too aggressively. If Barb has not seen a physical therapist, she should see one to make sure she's on the right program, stretching the right muscles and strengthening other muscles. And there's also some ways that you can keep pressure off that piriformis muscle with sitting, with rolled up towels and other cushions that can also give it a chance to heal too.
All right. And let's see, Rosemary emails and says, I do not have back pain, but I do have sciatic pain in the gluteus maximus. It pains when I sit and walk. Can this pain cause a feeling of being bruised in my buttocks and also on the side of the buttocks?
Okay. Well, that's kind of in the neighborhood of our piriformis, our friend the piriformis muscle. And you can have sciatica. Sciatica is typically sharp pain down the back of the leg, sometimes accompanied by numbness or tingling below the knee. And you can have it with or without back pain. Jason, our caller earlier, sometimes when you completely rupture a disc, it's primarily sciatica, and there's minimal back pain once you get over that initial injury. So it's a challenge to diagnose and sort out specifically where is the nerve being irritated. Is it in the hip? Is it in the back of the thigh? Or is it up in the spine? There are also lots of muscles that are innervated, and sounds like some of her Rosemary's pain could be coming from muscle.
Okay.
Where again, some manual therapy, some gentle stretching and strengthening just to take pressure off those muscles in the nerve is the right ticket.
Let's go to Sandy in Lake Geneva next. Hi, Sandy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about lower back pain. Probably overuse. If I'm out in the yard working all day or if I find myself standing for long periods of the day, my back is very tired at the end. And I'm assuming there's some kind of strengthening or stretching exercises I could be doing, if you have any suggestions or maybe a resource on the web I could go to.
Yeah, you bet. What you describe is fairly common for people to experience. It's the back just wears out. It fatigues on you. And so doing too much of any single activity can bring on symptoms that you've described. A couple of strategies is when you're out in the yard for long periods of time, if you can alter your activity, you know, instead of spending, you know, 2 or 3 hours doing the same type of activity, you know, do it for 45 minutes, then go do another activity that puts your spine and trunk in a different position. So, you know, you're varying the activity. So muscles are working differently, your posture changes, and that can help at least delay that onset of the fatigue or tiredness. Same thing with standing. You know, if you can change that up with other activities where you're on your hands and knees, or you're kneeling, or you're walking, that can help. Flexibility through the hips is really important for activities where we bend and twist, and then trunk strengthening or stabilization is also what's necessary to minimize this fatigue or low back tiredness. There's lots of exercises out there. You know, my recommendation would be, Sandy, is to see a physical therapist, even just for one or two visits, and have them examine you. You can describe the types of activities that you do on a regular basis, and then they can design a program for you, both short-term and long-term, in terms of how to progress it.
All right. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling, Sandy. And Marion Spooner, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Piriformis is not my friend. I've had chronic back pain since I was probably 13. Huge family history. Just about every one of my siblings have had something or surgery, including my father. I have never been to a medical doctor for any of this. I have done either exercises or chiropractic work. What... Are you there?
Yeah,
yep, we're still here.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I'm on a cell phone, so I get worried. right now, and it's been everything from lower back. Right now I'm experiencing middle back, where the pain runs down my arm. My fingers get numb. I've also had sciatica many, many, many times. First of all, I do not have a diagnosis, and I would like to get a diagnosis on exactly what's going on. My oldest sister was just diagnosed with
stenosis.
Yes, stenosis. But she had, like, crippling pain, so she was, like, admitted into the ER and did the MRI. Most of the doctors in my area will just prescribe muscle relaxers and send you home.
So... So what's your question, Mary? You said you wanted a diagnosis. That's probably going to necessitate seeing that.
And I'd like to know how to go about it without having to jump through a million zillion hoops. And I am thinking of physical therapy, but I know they are not all created equal.
That's true as well. That's true as well. Well, you know, the question to me boils down to, so you want a diagnosis. I mean, if you want a medical diagnosis, then you would see a sort of a medical physician. You'd see a medical doctor. If you want what we would consider sort of your functional or physical therapy diagnosis and treatment plan, you could see a physical therapist. In some institutions, such as here at UW, they can actually order some radiographic studies to look at that. And they can tell you, in terms of your signs and symptoms, what kind of intervention would be most useful to get you back up on your feet, doing the things you want to do, and actually managing this problem. So you it sounds like you have many things going on. You have an extensive family history, but what you really need is a program that's specific to you and your needs, that's going to keep you active and able to manage these things as they crop up. So you have a new symptom now of some upper back pain and some things down your arms. If you had a better understanding of your spine and what's going on with it, then you could manage that situation.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Mary. And if you see a physical therapist, you want to see a spine specialist. You know, based on your history, it's best if you saw somebody who worked primarily with people who had back pain, who's had chronic back pain. And if I was seeing you based on your history, I would probably also it would help me if there was some imaging being done that could maybe describe why you are not getting better, what's inside there anatomically. But a spine specialist would definitely be the way to go. You know, if you're not sure who to see in your area, if you want to leave contact information, I can find somebody.
I mean, I could barely walk.
Yeah. I can help you find somebody in your area if need be.
All right. So we'll put you on hold and get your email address or address. Jim Packard will take that, and Bill's really good at following up. So thanks very much for calling. Got you on hold, Mary, and we'll go to another email here. This one from Mike in Manchester, England, actually. I've had a double break in the shoulder sustained while playing a sport. It happened 2 days ago, and I'm still in and out of a sling. I have minimized all movement. However, swelling is still a problem. Analgesics are helping with the discomfort. However, I've been given a 4 to 6 week recovery time. Is there any aid to healing in terms of mineral vitamin supplements, heat, ice packs, or any other recommendations that you might have? And what strengthening exercises do you recommend for recurring shoulder injuries post-recovery?
Wow, that's a lot. Well, it's a little tough to deal with the specific problem since I don't know what he fractured. He said he had 2 fractures in his shoulder. But
double break in the shoulder, humerus.
Yeah. Oh, humerus? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So that is the upper arm bone, actually. So, you know, when I think of a shoulder fracture, kind of the first thing that comes to my mind is your clavicle. That's probably the most commonly fractured bone. So the humerus, you know, and it depends a little bit on the age and the location of the break and so on and so forth. But in terms of supplements, I would make sure that I have sufficiency in the areas that supplement bone health, such as vitamin D, calcium. So those would be the big ones. In terms of things to think about while you're recovering from this, if it is a humeral fracture, one of the things I want to do is make sure that my shoulder blade, the articulation between your shoulder blade and your rib cage, stays loose and mobile. You want to make sure that the glenohumeral joint, the main ball and socket joint, stays mobile because it can get stiff in a hurry. Your ability to treat that or to be active in that area really depends upon the location of your fracture in your humerus. So that is something that would be guided by the fracture and the radiographs there. Following the healing of the fracture, the most important thing, first step, is to regain motion that may have been lost during the immobilization period. Typically, when a fracture heals, in most people, it heals well and is sufficiently strong. What you really worry about are the other soft tissues in the area that have been immobilized, the joint, the articular cartilage, the ligaments, the muscle tendon unit, and so on. And when people come to therapy, it's less about the fracture and more about rehabilitating all the adjacent soft tissues that have been first probably traumatized at the time of the fracture and second have been immobilized. So there are a number of shoulder strengthening exercises that you can do once you've restored some mobility. And in terms of maintenance, I really focus on the rotator cuff. Of all the things that we see in the shoulder, the thing that tends to give people the most trouble over the course of a lifetime is their rotator cuff.
All right. Sharon in Duluth, Minnesota, on to you. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
I get a sharp pain on the inside of my thigh where it connects with the trunk. It really hurts when I walk, and I will turn my leg this way and that. Just a little bit of background. I wear orthotics, and I've worn them for years. I got a neuroma, I think, as a result of the orthotics at one time, and I haven't attended to that. It can be real sharp and painful sometimes. And I do have inept valves in my primary vein on this one particular leg, although I've noticed occasionally I get that pain on the other side, too. I did see an orthopedic doctor, and he said something about some sort of little bony growth there that gets irritated, but since I'm getting it on the other side, too, I'm almost wondering if I need another opinion.
Sharon, how long has this been going on?
Do you know, I would get it slightly for many years. I'd say 7, 8, 9 years. But it's becoming, it's always kind of sharp, but it didn't last very long. Usually when I, several years, but it's getting worse.
Okay, and there's not been a recent injury, slip or a fall or anything like that?
No, no.
How much walking do you do or on your feet activity?
I used to do more than I do now. I have a dog, so I do walk a minimum of probably a minimum of a mile a day just for the dog. And then I walk back and forth and move around a lot at work.
Okay. And did the orthopedic physician, did they take x-rays of your hip when you went in?
Do you remember? I've had a lot of, I don't know if they were x-rays or what the other thing is. I've had MRIs and stuff too. I've had a lot of problems in that leg area.
Okay. All right. Well, have you seen a physical therapist along the way?
Off and on, but not particularly for this thing, I don't think.
Okay.
I had the back pain, and then I do have a lot of leg pain, but I just sort of put up with that. But this is so sharp.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a kind of a different animal that you're dealing with right now. I would see a physical therapist and have them examine you, especially with it impacting your other hip. Because, again, if it's throwing off how you stand and how you walk, that's going to put more pressure on your back. And sharp pain is not a pain that we want to work through or try to exercise through, as opposed to something that's just a little tight or a little sore. They can examine you and help sort out, what is the source of this pain? Is it your hip joint? Is it surrounding muscles? And give you some specific exercises designed to help you walk more comfortably.
One minute. I do remember now, last year I went in for the hip area, and he did do an x-ray and told me the hip looked fine.
Okay.
Although the hip was bothering me some. But even that doesn't get as sharp as this. Is that the groin? Is that what you call that area?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
As this groin pain. The hip pain I can kind of put up with. But this is real, real sharp. I walk anyway, but I turn my leg funny. And if you got a dog, you got to move.
Well, yes, they do. Yes, they do. But the more you compensate, then the more secondary issues start developing. And so the therapist can get you on a good individual program and plus really help you how to progress it. And bring in your footwear that you most commonly, when you're out there walking your dog, bring that in with you so they can take a look at that as well.
There you have it. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling in, Sharon. Appreciate your call. Mary in Wausau emailed us about the person had elbow pain from swimming.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I used to have terrible elbow pain, similar to what the caller mentioned. I was a collegiate swimmer and power lifter. I went through numerous physical therapy regimens, thinking it was a tendonitis issue. That caused more aggravation. It turned out I was pinching the nerve in my elbow and ended up having to have ulnar nerve transposition surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I recovered very quickly and was able to finish my college swimming career.
Yeah, that's the ulnar nerve is fairly superficial on the inside of your elbow. That's your funny bone when you hit it and you get that zing down your arm. And so that's certainly one of the differential diagnoses on the medial side of the elbow. In the case of the swimmer, typically one of those forearm straps would worsen your symptoms. If it was a nerve compression injury, if it was a nerve instability issue, it might make it better. So it really depends upon the specific situation. But in many cases, the strap, in the case of a nerve problem, would make it worse.
Okay.
So it's certainly something to think about.
Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, as we talk about physical therapy issues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your physical therapy question at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Lois in La Crosse up next. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I've been suffering with De Quervain's tendonitis since about January. It got to the point where it was too much for me to tolerate in April, and I went in to see my doctor who diagnosed it. She sent me to occupational therapy. I went through getting a brace fitted specifically for my hand, a regimen of oral anti-inflammatory medication. That wasn't taking care of it, so they had me do iontophoresis on my wrist. That did not completely take care of it either, so I was sent to an orthopedic surgeon who suggested a cortisone injection. I had that. That was in May, and he told me if after a month, if it hadn't improved, to give him a call, and the next step would be surgery. Well, it hasn't completely improved. I can, if I'm not moving my hand, it doesn't hurt. But if I accidentally bump my thumb or turn my wrist a certain way, I get the most excruciating pain. That's way up the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes up my thumb. Sometimes it goes up my forearm. And I'm not really sure that I want surgery,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know what else to do besides wear the brace. And the occupational therapist told me that the brace's purpose was not to be wearing it 100% of the time so that I don't lose strength in the other muscles
mm-hmm.
in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't affect me in my work because I'm mostly on the computer, and actually mousing is a perfect position for my hand not to hurt.
Okay.
And typing numbers is the majority of the typing that I do, and I just use my fingers, not my thumb so much.
Yeah.
So have you been back to the therapist since the cortisone injection?
No, I haven't.
When's the last time you saw the therapist?
That would have been the end of May.
The end of May? Okay. So you're still under the therapist's care?
No, she discharged me from care when I went on to the surgeon, because in working with the orthopedic surgeon, they have hand specialists here that when you go through all these different steps of therapy, then they agree to see the patient because there's not really much more therapy you can do with them.
Okay.
And so, at least that's the information that they explained to
me. Okay. So you've gotten to the end of the road in therapy. So, you know, the question is, how much an improvement could you expect from surgery? So what's the margin? What's the gain that's available between where you're at now and what they could do for you in surgery? And that would be a question for the surgeon who's hopefully done this many, 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 many times.
He has. And he explained to me that, of course, there's never any total guarantee in surgery, but what they would do would be to cut through the retinaculum
mm-hmm.
and then allow it to heal, and the scar tissue that would form would actually extend out the retinaculum, allowing more space
mm-hmm.
for the tendons to slide underneath it.
Mm-hmm. And so the surgeon has said that people with your level of pain and function and so on would be improved
mm-hmm.
with that?
Sure.
So, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying yourself more time. You don't have to rush into it.
Okay.
It's always there. You know, a question would be if there's a certain optimal amount of time where you can't do the surgery anymore. It's doubtful in De Quervain's veins if there's an issue such as that. And then when you feel like the bad days are outnumbering the good days, then that's the time to do it.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you should have a program of strengthening exercises to help maintain the strength of the other muscles. I mean, one of your comments was that you didn't want to wear the brace all the time, that you shouldn't wear it because you don't want your other muscles to get weak.
Right.
That's certainly true, but hopefully you have an exercise program to help maintain the strength of those so you can wear the brace as much as you need to during those high-demand activities when you're most at risk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she gave me a whole bunch of exercises to do.
Yep.
She was great throughout the whole therapy, but it's just not going away, and it
yep.
being right-handed.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So I would stick with the therapy. You know, they say a minimum of 4 to 6 months, and you're just at 6 months now. You don't have to rush into this.
No.
So I'd work on it some more and work on it and work on it. When you decide you've had enough, then. And you have to be ready on all fronts to do it, not just physically, but emotionally, et cetera.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Lois. Judy in La Crosse, we go to you now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering about an aroma in your foot. What's the fix for that in terms of physical exercises? Is there any, or is it strictly orthotics? Just looking for some direction.
Well, in in terms of exercise, if you saw a physical therapist, one of the things they would do is they would look at your flexibility, your strength, and your posture in your lower extremity to see if there are specific stretching or strengthening exercises that might improve the posture and the way you move and use your lower extremity to decrease the stress on that part of your foot. The orthotics certainly are an important aspect of that to help relieve the stress in the area of the neuroma. Are there specific stretching or strengthening exercises like you do these five exercises when you have a neuroma? The answer is no. What you do is you look at the person as an individual, look at their leg length, look at their flexibility, look at their strength, look at their posture, and devise a program that will minimize the stress on that area.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate your call, too. And Ruth and Shano, your turn. Hi, Ruth.
All right. Hello. So, thank you. Now, the question, are these joint disabilities inevitable with aging? Ever since I visited relatives in Norway about 5 years ago, I've been taking a daily spoonful of cod liver oil. Is it just a coincidence that at the age of 86, I have no joint problems?
Oh, hallelujah, Ruth. I'd like to be in your gene pool.
You're our standard now, Ruth.
Exactly. No, it's not inevitable. About 65% or so, depending upon who you want to read or believe, of joint health is hereditary. So you need to pick your parents well.
Mm.
Cod liver oil, I would support your use of cod liver oil. It's, I believe it's an omega-3.
Can't hurt.
Yeah, fatty acid decreases, systemic inflammation. It's in the family of things that are good for your connective tissue health. So I don't see any problem with it at all. I don't know if it's a coincidence, but it's probably good living and good genetics.
I wouldn't change a thing, Ruth, if I were you.
All right. And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call, Ruth. All right. Good story there. Dennis in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I've got a problem with my left shoulder. I was diagnosed about 5 weeks ago with bursitis, and I wasn't really exercising or doing anything different than I normally do, but the inflammation was just in the bursa. The tendons and the muscles were okay. And I went to occupational therapy for 5 weeks. I got a series of exercises, which I followed to the extent I could. I used cold packs, anti-inflammatories, naproxen. And what has happened is I have a large fluid buildup in the bicep, between the bicep and the tricep, and it causes a lot of pain in the muscle. Could the bursa actually have been leaking any fluid?
No. I mean, it wouldn't leak fluid that would run down your arm that way. You're sure it's a sac of fluid? Is it in, when you say it's between your biceps and triceps, where, on the outside of your arm?
No.
Where?
It's in, you can feel a lump.
Okay.
It moves.
It moves. Does it move as you bend and straighten your elbow?
I haven't tried that. I mean, I can just palpitate it and kind of push it away.
And where is it?
It's right under the bicep.
Okay.
And next to the bone. And I went to my primary care. He mm-hmm. said, no, it's not a tumor or anything.
Okay, good.
Because it's proximal to the injuries time.
Okay.
And he said he'll put cortisone in the joint. And I'm trying to be conservative because I'm not insured.
Yeah.
He said an MRI might or might not show anything, but I really don't want to pay for one.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. Probably the first thing that pops into my mind is that you may have had a biceps rupture. Your biceps tendon runs right up in front of your shoulder and is closely associated with that bursa. And it can rupture. And it doesn't even have to be a major event. In fact, sometimes people don't even know that it has happened. What happens is it rolls up like a little window shade and is down in the area of where your biceps would be in your muscle, and it's a little palpable ball. Mm. And you can move it around because it's muscle tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't get that area injected at this point at all.
Well, he was just going to inject the bursa, not that area.
Yeah. Are you still having a lot of pain?
Not a lot, but okay. I do have focal pain, and it's the muscle that keeps me from doing the range of exercises to the extent which I should.
Are you still seeing the therapist?
For the time being, I just have the same exercises.
Okay. Well, you
just do them at home.
Yeah. You might see that person again to update and advance those and have them look at your biceps and see if indeed it is a biceps rupture. It's a pretty easy call to make on a clinical exam.
Easy repair?
No, you don't repair it. No. It doesn't repair itself, and people actually tend to function just fine without it. But your exercises may need to be tweaked based upon that information. So they may have been giving you exercises based upon the presumption that your primary problem was a bursitis, but the bursitis may be secondary to a biceps rupture. So they may need to focus on the biceps.
Mm, okay.
So that's where I'd go with it.
All right.
At this point.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are guests today as we talk about dealing with all those aches and pains here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you listening in. Lots of callers online, so we go right to the phones, and Dottie in Cudahy. Dottie, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad that I have this privilege. I'm 79, and I'm physically active. I go to the Y 3 times a week. I walk a lot. And recently, my hip started to click, not hurt, but click. And maybe I should also say that 2 years ago, I had meniscus surgery on the same, leg, that knee. Some pain came back, and I do exercises for my meniscus. But lately, the clicking in the hip. I'm not a hippie.
They might be turning into one, though, Dottie.
Yeah. Does it hurt at all?
Pardon me?
Does it hurt at all?
No.
All right.
It clicks, though. And I do walk a lot, and I wonder if it has anything to do with my knee and the meniscus surgery I had?
Yep.
It does, huh?
Probably. Is the clicking deep inside your joint, or is it an outside clicking? Can you tell?
Oh, no, I can't.
Okay, that's all right. That's
maybe
right.
A little bit of both.
Okay, some people can tell if it's a sort of deep inside the joint clunk, or there's some outside clicking stuff on the outside of your hip where the iliotibial band snaps over your trochanter. There's a trochanteric bursa there, and sometimes that clicks.
Uh-huh.
But chances...
Well, I do think of this. I've been told to do these exercises. I sit down, and then I extend my legs, and I make a tightness in my knee so that my the back of my knee, hits the floor.
Yep.
But then I also, when I lie down, another exercise is I bring up my leg. Yeah, my heel is pointed, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Or my toe is pointed. I bring it up, my leg up. And then sometimes when I do that exercise, I'll hear a click also.
Okay. All right. Well, is it related to your meniscus? Probably. You probably walked funny for a while when you had your sore meniscus. It may be that your knee is wearing out a little bit. You've compensated and changed how your gait is a little bit. All those subtle things come into play here. Should you be losing sleep over it? Probably not. Everyone snaps, crackles, and pops. So unless it's clearly associated with pain, we tend not to get terribly worked up about it. But I think staying active is going to be important. Maintaining good flexibility in your hip joint is going to be important. So continuing any stretching you're doing for the muscles around your hip joint is really good. If you're exercising, for example, in a pool, taking high marching steps to maintain the mobility in that hip joint is good. And keeping your legs and your core and your low back strong are all going to be helpful for the long-term health of that joint.
All right.
Yeah, if I could just dovetail on that, I agree.
Sure.
I tend not to get too concerned about, as long as there's no pain associated with it. It doesn't sound like it's there with every step that Dottie's taking. And so what I recommend to patients, if there's an exercise where they get this clicking, is just to change the angle of their knee or their hip, turn their leg in a little bit or out a little bit, and see if they can do the same exercise without the clicking. If it happens enough, you can start getting a little bit of irritation. But and also, if it's not there, if it's only there with certain activities or movements, don't test it 25 or 30 times a day. You can test it once or twice a day just to check, see if it's still there, but no more than that.
All right. So there you have it, Dottie. Thanks a lot for calling. John and Webster, we're on to you. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Just appreciate the opportunity to get online with you and your guests.
Sure.
I have a sciatica condition, and in the past several months, I've had steroid injections to the back on three different occasions. I'm also under the care of a chiropractor, and between those two, my back pain and my leg pain has been nearly eliminated. However, I am experiencing a leg cramping at night. It'll begin about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll experience cramps to the calves and to the feet, both legs, from 2 o'clock on about every half hour until I finally just plain get out of bed.
Okay.
Any advice for me?
So, John, when did this cramping begin?
About a couple of weeks after the last steroid injection I had.
Okay. All right.
And I had cramping in the entire leg prior to receiving any injections at all.
Okay. Any such cramping during the day at all?
Very minimal.
Okay. And any numbness or tingling that's left remaining from the sciatica?
That's also very minimal.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. Well, it's possible. Certainly it sounds like this is related to the back and the sciatica incident that you had. Sleeping positions. I would really kind of monitor what position you are waking up in at this 2 o'clock in the morning when this cramping occurs. As I mentioned earlier in the show, if you're on your side, have a pillow or two between your knees and a pillow underneath that top arm. Keep your back in more of a neutral position. If you're on your back, a couple pillows underneath your knees tends to put your back also in a better position. And that may help some. If there's any stretching or gentle strengthening exercises that you are doing currently for your back, doing those right before you go to bed at night may help minimize. Some gentle stretching of your calves or hamstrings, gentle, before you go to bed may also help minimize this cramping that you get. But if it is directly related to what your back treatment was for, you know, this also should start getting less over the next few weeks. And if not, I would give your doctor a phone call and just describe what you're dealing with and see what kind of input they can give you.
And good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Marcy in Green Bay emailed us and says, over the past few months, I've been getting numbness in my right hand if I garden holding a pen or any other activity that uses my hand in that fashion. At times I'm awakened to horrible pain through the palms of my hand as well. I've tried massaging the palm of my hand during this pain, but it only makes it worse. It does eventually go away on its own, but it's happening with more frequency. Anything I can do other than giving up those activities that I love?
Well, it sounds like carpal tunnel, which is a compression of a nerve. The median nerve as it passes through a fairly small space in your wrist, and some local inflammation in the area can compress that nerve. Some things that you can do for it at home, And if it's okay medically, she could check with her physician and pharmacist. An anti-inflammatory may help bring down swelling if there's swelling in the area that's causing it. There are also ergonomically designed tools that are designed to help minimize the stress on the wrist as they're using these tools for gardening, et cetera. So those can be helpful in controlling symptoms as well. Additionally, she might want to see a hand specialist for braces or things like that that she can wear for sleeping to help decrease the stress. Sometimes when we sleep, we automatically flex or curl our wrists some, and that increases the compression in the area. So you want to sleep with your hands in a little bit of extension to keep that carpal tunnel wide open. And there are splints that are made for that. So those are all things that that can be done.
Jay in West Bend emailed and says, for years I suffered with sciatica, but started a running and cross-country ski program about 10 years ago. And since 2000, I've completed 6 Berkeys, 3 full marathons, and currently run about 15 miles a week. The sciatica has just about disappeared. This just a coincidence, or is there a connection between running and sciatica? Perhaps running or other exercises can help others. I'm 62.
Well, running and doing Berkeys is not a part of rehab for acute sciatica. It would be nice if that was the case, that kind of activity. But true sciatica, where there's some sharp pain going on the back of the leg and some numbness and tingling, is nerve-related. And a nerve that's irritated does not like to be stretched very aggressively. And if the nerve is being irritated by joint conditions in the spine, the pounding from the running actually would probably make it worse.
Okay.
Certainly, the better general condition people are in, the fewer back episodes they have, and they tend to recover faster. So the better conditioned people are in, the better for their back. But it was probably not the running that cured his sciatica.
Ron in Sauk City has a question for you. Ron, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I love your program. I have had the measles since I was probably in my late 40s. I was in the military for 22 years and ran in combat boots every morning for a long time.
Yeah. Measles, knee problems.
Yeah. Lately, it's gotten, of course, worse because I haven't gotten any younger. And the problem being, I keep getting braces from the VA, and I get advice that unless I cannot stand to walk more than 4 or 5 or 8 days a month, they don't want to do anything about my knees. But I know I'm completely missing a meniscus on one side, and on the other side, it's degraded severely. Is there any exercise that I can do? Casual walking doesn't bother me other than I feel like I'm walking on rusty hinges.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything I can do to strengthen anything there that'll kind of counteract that?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many things that you could do. And just because you have arthritis or worn-out knees, and if you had a total meniscectomy, that's very bad for your joints. And it sounds like you're doing remarkably well despite that. So I would stick with the walking as you're doing, keeping it within your joints' tolerance. I'd make sure when you're walking that you're wearing good supportive shoes with good cushion. And ideally, you should walk on a soft surface, on a track or a trail or something like that, and not on the pavement. Additionally, there are strengthening exercises that you can do for your thigh muscles, your quadriceps, your hamstrings, and your hip muscles. And increasing the strength in those muscles can minimize the stresses on your knee joints and can prolong the pain-free days and prolong the health of your joint. And finally, I'd say for regular ongoing exercise to maintain your general health and body weight, the pool would be an ideal place because it minimizes the impact loads and it would provide an alternative mode of exercise to the walking.
So I'm no fan of surgery, so when the doctor tells me, hey, if you have more pain-free days and you have painful days, don't do it because there are no guarantees.
Right.
That's probably a good option, huh?
Yeah, but you know, you don't want to wait until your knees get so bad that you're really suffering. You want to start now to build up and maintain the strength that you have. You don't want to wait until you're in a deep, deep hole and trying to dig yourself out. So get started in a program like that now.
Do you have access?
It's not a bad thing.
I'm sorry?
Exercise with the braces I've been provided is not a bad thing.
As long as it's not hurting. I don't know what kind of braces there are. There are, you know, like 1,000 different kinds of braces out there. So,
Ron, do you have access to the internet?
Yes, I do.
Well, I tell you what, if you want to know what a knee surgery might look like, Lori's got a great website.
Yeah, it's www.edheads.com. .org. It's EDHEADS.org. EdHeads.org. And you and or your kids, my kids love to do it. You can go through a virtual total knee replacement and you can see what that's like, or a hip replacement or a hip resurfacing or even brain surgery if you'd prefer that. But they've got a lot of great activities so you can see what would be involved with that. And if that doesn't scare you into doing some other exercise now, I don't know what will. But yeah, sticking with some exercise now while you're feeling good. You know, if the braces make your knees feel better, then by all means wear them for your exercise.
All right. Edheads.org. All right. Thanks a lot. I've got to go on. We've got the web page up here, but I've got to go in and take a look at those.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun.
Looks like they'd be a lot of fun. Let's see. We've got Greg, is 55 years old, in early April fell on his kneecap playing basketball. The floor burned a hole in his warm-up pants, and the kneecap felt burned. Seemed to be a deep bruise. It does not affect walking or running, but it's still painful to kneel down on the knee. Additionally, there's a mushy feeling under the skin and on top of the kneecap. I did not seek a medical attention for the original injury. Is there topical aid that might assist in the healing process? Heat, cold, or whatever?
I'd probably say ice. In front of your kneecap is a bursa called the prepatellar bursa. And so when he landed on his kneecap, he may have stirred that up and given himself a good bursitis. That may be the mushy feeling that he feels. Typically, when you land right on your kneecap, what you do is you actually bruise or injure the articular cartilage on the undersurface of your kneecap, and that's the biggest problem we see following that kind of injury, and that's kind of what I was prepared for. But when he talks about the mushy feeling, that may be the bursa that sits on top of there, and that responds fairly well to icing, some stretching of your quadriceps.
Peg in Rice Lake emailed and says, what do you do for that virtually unknown condition called post-polio syndrome? I've read that there is a controversy about exercise in these cases.
Well, I've seen some people with post-polio syndrome in the pool. And as with all activities, but probably more so in this case, getting the dosage of exercise right is the hard part.
What is post-polio syndrome, by the way?
It's a collection of signs and symptoms where after their polio and they've recovered from their polio, they continue to have musculoskeletal problems. They have cardiovascular problems and so on. It's almost feels like a relapse. The over-exercising a muscle in that case can be send them the wrong direction. So it takes a fine balance of getting the dosage of exercise right for that individual.
Okay.
It's not unlike other neuromuscular diseases where getting the right amount of exercise and the right frequency, intensity, duration so that it doesn't tip them over the edge and over-exercise them. So that she's right. There is controversy in that area. You need to work with a therapist who's knowledgeable in that area.
Nancy and Madison, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just happened to be in the car and turned on your station. And I have a strange question because it's not me personally. I saw my niece this weekend, and she was in a four-wheeler accident, had trauma to her knee. She tore her ACL and MCL. She has very limited insurance, so they're going to treat it conservatively before they look at surgical intervention. They have her in an immobilizer. They gave her crutches. This is a week out, and she doesn't know what to do, how she should progress as far as activity, weight bearing, and I have no idea, and she's afraid to call her physician and follow up. So could you give me any pointers that I could put her in the right direction?
Very quickly, she should get hooked in with a physical therapist. For people who have limited insurance, usually you have some coverage there, even a couple visits or visits that are spaced a couple weeks apart to help guide her through this process. It's really important with the combination MCL-ACL. The ACL, if it was a total ACL, it's not going to heal. But the long-term prognosis will be dictated by how well that MCL heals. So if she's too aggressive with the MCL and is overly aggressive in moving, weight-bearing, stressing that ligament as it's healing, it can lead to long-term instability, which will dictate that she will need to have surgery then to stabilize the joint. So you want the MCL to heal well so that she has a fighting chance to get stability in the knee. But at the same time, you don't want her knee to get stiff. If she ends up with a stiff knee, that's a disaster too. And that's why she really needs some guidance. And again, maybe she needs to only see the therapist once every couple weeks, but someone needs to be monitoring her, heading her in the right direction, giving her exercises to do, and making sure she's staying on track as she heals.
All right. Good luck. And thank you very much for calling, Nancy. Harold in Superior, on to you. Hi, Harold.
Well, hi. I have neuropathy in my feet, and as I've read, it seems like they say it can be caused by this or that or any number of things, and it seems to have come on at the same time that I injured my back, and I've got some issues with some of the lower discs. I don't know if it's L4, D5, and I've had an MRI back in 91 and then one this year. And I went to a sports physician that specializes in injuries, I guess. And he said that my upper back was pristine. He said he wished his back was so good. But he said, you know, there's a L4, D5, or whatever, the lower disc issues with
Stenosis? Spondylolisthesis?
Yeah, something like that. It's hard to pronounce. Which I had back in 91, and it's a little bit greater now. And he said that my feet problem would not relate to the back because he said those nerves are in your upper back. And I'm thinking now after, well, gee, don't they have to go through, you know, your spine somewhere, you know, through your back to get to your feet?
That's a reasonable question.
Below, you know, that's a layman thinking here, you know.
All right, well.
Well, and they're your feet, so these are things you should be thinking of. The nerves that innervate the feet come from the low lumbar area, the L4-5, the L5-S1 nerve, and S2 nerves supply sensation to the feet. And the L4-5 disc is, along with the bottom lumbar, are the most common to break down over time and can cause pressure on nerve. A true neuropathy is more related to conditions like diabetes, where the nerve is inflamed and intense burning is oftentimes the chief complaint. Nerve pressure in that low lumbar spine, it can cause, you know, sharp pain and intense pain, but also tingling and numbness. And the spondylolisthesis, which is a slip between two vertebrae, can cause some pressure on nerves. So you can reach a point where the nerves are irritated enough where you can't regain full function. But I guess what I would want to make sure, Harold, is it a true neuropathy, so something like diabetes, or is it more related to your back? And that's where working with your physician to sort out is critical. And a PT can help either one of those conditions, but it makes a difference what the diagnosis is.
And with that, we have to conclude. Good luck to you, Harold, and thank you guys so much for being with us today.
We'll absolutely.
Look forward to your next visit on July 13th.
Pleasure as always.
Lori Tyne Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in Physical Therapy at the UW Medical School, our guests. They will be back, and we'll have them on July 13th. Tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk talks about your pet's health. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.